Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, the podcast from Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. These are our Bad Batch Fridays, where we talk about every episode from the third and final season of The Batch. Today, focusing on episode 5, The Return. The episode, by the way, that Goose and me incorrectly thought was going to be the return of Asajj Ventress, and as par for the course, we were completely wrong. But anyway, before we get started, we're really excited to introduce our guest for tonight, Sean the Apostate Room. Welcome to the Triad, Sean.
Welcome, Sean. How's it going?
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
I hope you're not still jet lagged. You were in South Africa. Had how many hours? 36-hour flight to get back to home?
Yeah, it was 47 door-to-door.
That's intense.
Yeah, definitely still jet lagged, but happy to be back. I hadn't watched like a single hour of television in the last 2.5-3 weeks, so
amazing,
I'm catching up. There's a lot of stuff that came out.
Love is Blind, Star Wars.
Love is Blind. I'm catching up on Love is Blind. You know, you gotta like prioritize the important things in life, I think.
True. Yes.
So
true.
Yes. Well, I'm very glad you're on the show finally, Sean. We met in London Celebration. It's incredible that like how Star Wars brings everyone together, even though, you know, we had to go to another country to finally meet, and it was a fraught first meeting, I would say, because there was lots of drama, lots of anger, redemption, excommunication. It was. It was a lot, but you redeemed. We don't have to go into all the details of everything that happened at Star Wars Celebration, but why don't you tell us a little bit about that Star Wars journey that you've had that culminated in Star Wars Celebration London and then Dragon Con in Atlanta?
Well, I mean, it's been a year. First, I'll just say that. It's only been a year. It sort of felt, I feel like I've known you for a lot longer than that, but yeah, you were sort of at the crux of the Apostate nickname, and you know, there's probably more than one story involved in that would take me ages to tell. But yeah, no, basically I've been a massive Star Wars fan since I was a child. My first celebration that I was able to, you know, pay for and go to myself was Chicago.
Hell
2019.
Yeah. My hood, my neighborhood. So we were there and
we passed
probably, and we just didn't realize it.
Absolutely. So I went to the one in Anaheim, went to London, you know, then we went with some friends obviously to Dragon Con, and that was a whole different sort of side adventure. But yeah, no, I've been a rabid Star Wars fan for many, many years, loving all aspects of it. I read the books, I read the comics, I watch the shows, the movies, play the video games. It's a big, big part of my life, I would say. I had a podcast for a while, technically still do, but I haven't really recorded on that for a while, called Bogus Cantina. Might pick that up again at some point, but you know, life's busy.
That's good.
But yeah.
Busy is good.
Yeah.
But there's another aspect to your Star Wars fandom that I think you've been very humble about right now, and it is, I think, the apotheosis of the apostate, because where in Star Wars Celebration London, the apostate was a negative, a pejorative, almost, to your name, I feel like Dragon Con, you reclaimed it. You took it back. You made it into a victory cry. And now the apostate means it's a name of victory. Because for those of you that aren't familiar, Dragon Con has one of the toughest Star Wars trivias in Star Wars trivia. And Sean Room, the apostate, got third place. For those that are only listening, Sean was showing off the diploma. This is not a diploma, you didn't graduate, the certificate, whatever, the award, which was one of the highlights, I would say, of Dragon Con to just all of us slightly hungover, maybe, from the night before, and then see your rise to power, be there on the stage next to other amazing trivia, Star Wars trivia personalities, including, but not limited to, the Daemons. Hey, how did that feel? How did that feel to all of a sudden be from the crowd to be on the stage?
It was pretty crazy, especially because I don't consider myself an exceptional trivia player. I mean, I know my Star Wars, I read everything, so I understand that it's up there. But, you know, we were taking that, you do a little entry exam to see how you place, and I was sitting next to you and Chase, and you're sitting next to a whole bunch of people were there.
Yeah.
And we were already drinking, so we were a little bit a little bit spiffed at that point. And we were sort of like being troublemakers, if I'm being honest. We were distracting people and being kind of obnoxious, if we're being totally honest. But we took the test. I was as shocked as anyone. I actually woke up to a whole bunch of text messages from people at DragonCon saying like, oh my gosh. And even Eli, our friend Eli, who does a trivia competition, Confrontations, exactly. He texted me as well saying like, oh my gosh, you're on the finalist list. So that was pretty unreal to know that I was going to be that evening in the final 10 or however many people it came down to. And I was proud of my performance even then. I missed some really stupid questions.
But it's not about the ones you missed, because it's about the one you hit that I'll never forget. You got the legacy run. You got the legacy run, the disaster that kickstarted the High Republic books. You got, and Alex Damon, trivia champ, did not get it. And you did.
He literally did a short on that today, actually.
I know.
But I was sitting right next to him and I was tapping him during the trivia because I knew he knew it. He did know it. It just wasn't coming to his mind. Mm-hmm. But it was a good feeling to get one that no one else on the panel got. That was rare. But I also missed one that everybody else got, which was about General Beers. So, you know, your brain does weird things up there. You remember things. Mm-hmm. You blank on stuff. Yeah. It's a humbling experience.
Well, you don't have to be humble when you are a champion. or as a gym teacher would say, a second loser.
Yes, I was the second loser. But maybe next year I'll be the first loser. You know,
goals.
Try to improve.
Goals are important.
But yeah, I mean, but enough of our shenanigans. We've, you know, gone in. To many shenanigans. I'm sure we'll get into many more in the coming conventions and hopefully in Tokyo. But, you know, we're here to talk Bad Batch. I mean, and by the way, before Bad Batch, I just got my Black Series Sabine Wren lightsaber.
Of course you did.
That's pretty sweet.
Of course I did. It's like, boom, motherfuckers. Yeah. Green lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
Best lightsaber color.
The lighting looks really good on that.
Yeah, it does.
It is. It's worth every penny. And this is why I'm 35 and not married. Keep that in mind.
Is that the only reason?
The only reason I'm willing to talk about on this podcast about it. I'll text everyone later, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But the return, we were supposed to get Asajj Ventress. Obviously, we didn't. And it's today's Katrina Dennis's birthday, our good friend. So happy birthday, Katrina. She was supposed to be on this episode way back when, but then she had messaged us being like, I don't think you, because she might or might not have gotten screeners to the Bad Batch. So she messaged me being like, I don't think you want me for that episode. And it's like, oh, read between the lines, shuffle things around. So I think we know which episode Asajj Ventress is going to show up.
Let's see if we get it right.
We'll see if we get it right. Otherwise, we have to reschedule Katrina again. Because she is the number one Asajj Ventress fan. So she must be with us.
She must, yes.
So we had, instead of Asajj's return, we had a different return, which I thought was maybe more poignant in a way. So let's just dive right into it. Nani, what did you think of the return?
Yeah, now that we know what's going on in the Bad Batch, I think it would have been really premature to have Asajj Ventress already here in this episode, especially with what we were getting from, you know, episodes 1 through 4 and this great redemption arc that Crosshair has been in, and now we actually get to see how he's kind of trying to reinsert himself into the Batch, and how it's a difficult process, because even though Omega is so willing to, you know, forgive him, and obviously she also had the experience of being incarcerated with him as well, Omega wasn't with them, you know, for however many years it was that they were soldiers together. So she's actually kind of has a more, an easier place to be forgiving from, as opposed to Hunter and the rest of them who were with him so much, and the betrayal was so much stronger for them, and especially for Hunter, because I feel like Wrecker was a little bit more, I'm just happy you're back, like with the batch is getting a little bit more back together, but Hunter was very resistant to it. Oh, yeah. So to see how those interactions happened, and the fact that it was set in, you know, Barton 4, where Crosshair finally realized what the Empire was truly about, I think it was really full circle for his story and for, you know, continuing the redemption, because I don't think it's over. It's basically just beginning, but it's like the first time that we really get to hear him say that he regrets what he did when he decided to stay with the Empire and abandon his brothers. So I think all in all, it was a good, still, you know, kind of episode of the week episode, because we know we have like the mission and the monster and all these great action things, but there's still so much great character development, and it just, it, I feel like there's just not a moment wasted so far this season. So I really enjoyed it.
Sean, what about you?
Yeah, it was a great episode. I think it was a very important one. You know, some people have said it felt a little bit slow, or even the word filler has been thrown out there. And I pretty strongly disagree with that being used as a word in, you know, most Western media. It has a very specific use in, you know, Japanese anime manga culture that is very specific to that. But it's just not filler. You know, there's some really fascinating character stuff happening here, specifically around Crosshair's return to the batch. And if anything, I think that it was a pretty expedited version of that. We got from the beginning of this episode sort of the first real interactions between Crosshair and Hunter and feeling that tension to the end of the episode. It certainly, the book isn't closed and they're not, you know, running off into the sunset happy-go-lucky, but they've mended a lot over the course of 20 minutes. So I actually think it's pretty fast paced in terms of character development, and it was really richly done. I think the return of Crosshair to the batch, but also the return of Crosshair to the place where he made the decision to, you know, leave the Empire to change what was happening. You know, he had gotten glimpses of it before, but that's the spot where he really where they finally had like broke him apart.
And
Yeah, and, you know, my one complaint is that we didn't see Lieutenant Nolan's body lying there, you know, as a reminder to all about how much of an asshole that guy was.
Oh, God,
But I also want to say, aside from the story elements of it, like, this show is so freaking beautiful.
Yeah,
it is.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of those episodes where you look at it, and you look at the composition, you look at the scenery, you look at the lighting, you look at the textures, and it's almost to the point where I feel like this is the medium where Star Wars is supposed to be. Like, it's great that we get that live action stuff. It's great we get it in books and comics. All of it is awesome. But this feels like they're at the level of quality now where they can do anything they want to.
Yeah.
And that is such an awesome thing to see. So those are my main takeaways. It's always good to see a nice giant monster, like, you know, the worm, giant worm.
I was just going through the Star Wars, thankfully blesses us through starwars.com with the episode guides.
They're so literally kinda called worms,
yes, but with a y and they're called ice worm with a y, which I'm just like, keep it simple stupid. And those are such a joy to just go through and just see all the concept art for all the episodes. But I agree. And it's something, and we sound like a broken record every week, because we're just like, the animation is beautiful. And it's just incredible to see
the
like,
score
where
is
we started.
Insane.
The Kiners are killing it every single week. So it's kind of, it's sad to see the Bad Batch is ending, but also exciting to be like, well, if they're, you know, confident about how to end the story, that they can do it in three seasons. That means that this season is, and so far it has delivered on this, but that this season is going to be lean and every episode is going to be poignant in terms of getting the development that they need for every character to then have a satisfactory conclusion for this clone arc that started with the Clone Wars, because Bad Batch is kind of that coda. It's not, I mean, obviously it's a spin-off from the Clone Wars, but it's kind of a sequel of sorts as well. So it bookends that story, and I think it's going to do so very well because the intentionality of all these episodes are so so well thought and crafted. Because I can just imagine the writers while they were doing season two and then they did The Outpost. I can just imagine them being like, okay, this is what we're going
to set up. We have to go back
in this episode so that we can, you know, finish that moment in the next season, because it's so well done, and I hope that that's true. I hope that it was, when they were writing that episode, they were like, this is what's going to happen.
That it was completely purposeful.
Because, you know, the with the, what was the name, because the bird has a name too. I was just looking at it in the trivia stuff of the episode guide. It's, the bird-like creatures are called ice vultures. Okay, I thought they had a cooler name. But yeah, when he sees the ice vulture in the outpost, and then the first thing he sees when he comes down of the ramp is the ice vulture, and he's like, ooh, that's, you're doing such a good job, Star Wars. But before, like, I get into, like, all the, you know, symbolism of the episode, which I thought was really, really clever, I have to put the question out there for everybody. This episode came out, obviously, this week, and then this week we also got Dune Part 2, and... what's Dune known for? A sand hot planet with sandworms. And then this episode is a cold snow planet with ice worms. So it's the mirror of Dune. Do you, it can't be a coincidence that this episode released the week that Dune Part 2 came out. And we have like the sandworms and then the ice worms. Please join me in the conspiracy theory that Lucasfilm was just like, Drop the worm with the worm.
I don't know, man. It's one of those things where the Force works in mysterious ways. And so I am actually leaning that this was just a crazy
coincidence.
Because, like, the timing of it all, like, the way that they would have had to prepare that and like, wait until they knew that the Dune thing was gonna happen and get delayed at this point and like line it all up, it seems a little bit too good to be true, but it is wild. It is pretty crazy that we have that. I saw a lot of people calling the worm Snow Halud.
Oh my god.
ripping on the name of the worms from Dune. But
yeah,
that would be one of that would have been awesome if we had Javier Bardem voice a character in this episode.
Like Javier Bardem voices one of the other clones that didn't die and like comes out and talks to them. That would have been pretty wild.
Super non sequitur. Nani, have you seen Dune Part 2?
I have not.
Okay. I have not either, by the way.
Mm-hmm. You just rewatched the first part.
Sean. I rewatched the first one, yeah.
And obviously, Nani, you watched the first part because we talked about it with Josie last
year. I actually wasn't there for that conversation.
No.
Because I had something, I wasn't there and I hadn't watched it yet. I watched it after. Like when it came out on Max or something, I eventually watched Dune Part 1.
But you're obviously going to watch Part 2.
Oh, yeah. I'm still going to watch Part 2. I don't know what to really expect. I wasn't a huge fan of the first one. The second one looks better from the trailers, but I don't know. And Husband actually read the books, and he says the books get like progressively insane. Weirder, like super insane. Like,
I went to the Wikipedia and I was like, what the?
Yeah, at some point it starts to get like spin-offs or something, and he's like, "I'm done. I can't. It's getting too weird. It's messing with my mind." Like,
and this coming from people that want more weird in their stories.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. So we read a lot of fantasy and stuff. So when Husbando told me like it gets too weird, I was like, "Wow, it must have been like woo, crazy."
Well, then you definitely have to watch it because, and this is pun intended. It's spicy. Mm-hmm. I have spicy opinions about this movie. And considering how our first episode went, where we talked about the first part, I'm sure that we're going to have an even livelier discussion about part two. Yeah. But
I'll have to watch it. Yeah,
that's for later.
That's for later
for hot sandworms and now cold sandworms. Which actually, and this is, let's see if this joke lands. I was surprised at how big that worm was, considering how cold it got there.
Wow, that's such a dude joke.
Sorry, there was supposed to be a female guest on. That would have played a little differently.
Yeah, Sean, your masculinity is just making me be like going full testosterone here. Yeah.
Oh,
sorry, Tim, I apologize to everyone for that joke. I thought it was a little more clever. I guess.
Yeah.
Not. Sorry.
Not so much. It's okay.
Well, you know, it can't.
You tried.
It can't be aces all the time. Sometimes it has to be a miss. Because if there's no miss, then when you hit that home run, it's that much more impressive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, but yeah, but I think one of the cool things about this episode was like how great it was. I mean, because obviously these are animated episodes, so a little on the shorter side, probably like 20-25 minutes. But we've talked about it before, like they pack so much story into them that it feels like so satisfying. I think this one in particular, even though it was quote unquote a slow episode,
I think it's
like every frame, especially like when they're at the ice planet, which I don't know if there's a name for the planet yet.
Barton 4.
Look at you. You're going to win Dragon Con trivia this year. if you don't go to Dragon Con, you'll pass the bar.
That'll be on the bar, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It will.
Of course.
It will.
Star Wars trivia at the bar. Mm-hmm.
It will.
Yeah. It's Barton for Barton.
Of course. Four. Of course. Of course.
Barton versus Palpatine. Do you remember that Supreme Court decision? Shape the galaxy. Come on. But yeah, every moment like in that planet was so meaningful and impactful, especially with those scenes with Hunter and Crosshair, because you know that moment when they're just about to go and fight and like punch each other, and then just the monster just like pops up all of a sudden. She's like, "Oh man, it's the beast within us. We all have to wrestle with it." And it's so good. So I mean, I could be talking on my own here about like how I felt like all the symbolisms of that fight and the worm and everything, what it meant. But I want to kind of start with you, Sean. Like, what was your reaction to like all those moments between Crosshair and Hunter, and like how that redemption was achieved, like what the worm and the caves mean and everything? Just go ham on this now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that redemption is something, obviously, it's a core part of Star Wars. We've been getting it for years and years, you know, and it's something that is always going to be there. I think it's one of those foundational parts of Star Wars. But I think that there's a lot to be said for characters who do get redeemed in this galaxy, often, at least on screen or in the books, don't have to really deal with the fallout and the consequences of their actions. They usually die right away, or they go off at the sunset, whatever happens, they're not there. And this is one of the first times where we get to see someone try to rebuild the trust that was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost a lot of trust. And so it's, you know, while the larger plot of the galaxy, we didn't move all that stuff, the larger clone conflict forward all that much in this episode, the whole thing is about him trying to reestablish that connection. And Omega is just like, they'll let you back, but you have to put in the effort. You have to talk to them. This involves serious, heavy, uncomfortable conversations that you're pretty bad at, you know, like,
yeah.
So I loved all those conversations, you know, with Omega trying to play mediator, but also
therapist.
Just nudge them towards each other in a healthier way.
Yeah.
You know, I think Echo does some of that too, or at least reassures Omega and the audience that, you know, they want to be friends and be brothers again, so that the pull is there, but they have to put in the effort to make it work. And, you know, there's nothing that like brings people together than adversity. And in Star Wars, adversity often comes in the form of giant creatures. You know, and the worm, the ice worm, definitely proved that. And, you know, they had to do their Bad Batch problem solving thing. They had to overcome really specific niche scenarios that the regs probably couldn't do, but they can because they're, you know, they're who they are. And so connecting, and also the banter that goes on between them as they're trying to run away from this worm. Like at one point, Crosshair shouts to him, he's like, okay, I'm going to try to shoot a hole in the soft part of the ice, in the shallow part of the ice to let you up. And Hunter responds, like, you're going to try? And he's like, I'm glad you heard me right. Yes, that's what I said. Yes.
which so also a testament to Dee Bradley Baker and how incredible that man is as a voice actor, to be able to just
do all these different characters with completely different personalities and
play against himself.
He's a marvel. And we got to meet him briefly at Celebration. We walked by him as he was coming out of a room, and we walked by, and I maybe a little bit aggressively asked if I could get a snapshot with him.
Aggressively is another statement, yes.
But he was so, so friendly. He was very open to it, as long as we could do it while walking. And so I have some some blurry photos of me and Dee Bradley Baker. But seeing him on stage, even at the Bad Batch panel, like how quickly he can transition between these characters and how immediately you can tell who's who and what's what, and the emotion behind it all. And, you know, it does shine through in episodes like this, where it's deeper emotional stuff between two of his own characters.
Nani, what was your analysis, like that whole ice sequence, as we are gonna start calling it now?
the ice sequence. It was so rough to, you know, just see Crosshair's reaction to just being back in that planet that just broke his body and soul and everything that happened, and having to use the planet in a positive way to like try to find, you know, the coordinates to Tantus and to help the Bad Batch. Like, he actively put himself in a really uncomfortable position to try to help the Batch. And but clearly there's still a lot of conflict between him and Crosshair. And I really like the conversation that they have right before the worm shows up, when Crosshair is just like trying to be apologetic, but then he snaps and is like, Hunter, your anger is not entirely warranted. You're also pissed that you screwed up. I missed everything to send you a message. You were late. You failed to save her. So you can't put all of this on me, which is like, it's so real. And right, I think in that moment when Hunter's like trying to fight back to the comment, that's when the worm shows up. And in that moment of them like trying to air out their disgruntlement, they're forced to work together. So it was really good. I was really impressed that like Crosshair got it out, because Crosshair is so inexpressive. And for him to just actually be like, I'm not just going to take this anymore. I know I'm guilty. I feel like crap about this, but you have to let up, because it wasn't just me. And I think it shows a lot that he's really trying this reinsertion thing, because, you know, Crosshair as the sniper, you know, they're always tend to be isolationists to begin with. And, you know, he was with the Batch, but then when we see him by himself with the Empire, he's usually always by himself. He's always eating lunch by himself. He's the missions like are almost always him by himself. Sometimes he leads other people, but he's not really part of a team. So it's extra hard for him after like the time that he spent with the Empire to try to be part of a team again. And I think they're doing those transitions really well. And it was really emotional, I thought, and well done. So I don't think it was a slow episode.
I mean, especially like that scene when Wrecker just comes out and he has the, you know, the box, and then he's like, I never got rid of this. It just didn't feel right. I was like, man.
The heartstrings.
Wrecker's such a softy.
Something I'm really hoping for, and I thought about this when I watched it for the first time, I'm like, oh, he's getting his armor back. Like, that's going to be awesome. But they show, they haven't touched it. It is that black and red armor. So what I'm really hoping for is we get a repaint. And the next time we see him in that armor, or maybe a little further down, there will be some reveal moment where they've done the orange and teal reskin of that armor. That will be like the symbolism for him being back for good. I can see that happening, and I would put like good money on that happening too.
Next episode?
And that'd be great.
Maybe not next episode, but it'll happen.
Yeah. We'll save that for the bank of responsible speculation.
Responsible speculation.
That actually happens.
Yeah. That's responsible speculation, I think.
Yeah. And especially because it was such a sweet moment from Wrecker, that's like, it just came so natural to him. There's something so great about Wrecker, like being the biggest, like more aggressive one that wants to have anything to blow up, but he's still the biggest softy. I love Wrecker. And I think another really small moment that just tugged at my heartstrings was when they're trying to figure out how they're going to get the encryption done. And they're like, oh, it's something that tech would have done. And then everybody like, all silent for a second after they mentioned tech, and I was just like,
Tech. Plus they got the lighting of that scene too. They were on Pabu with the sunset, and it's like serious but also mournful, and it's, you know, you can just picture like they wish that tech were sitting at that dinner table with them.
And yeah, it's just like it's
heavy.
They gained a brother, but they had to pay the price of losing another one to be able to gain that one, which is kind of like a heartbreaking thing. But I think that was kind of the really cool framing of how they started the episode by being in Greece. I mean, Pabu is, you know, I mean, they're in paradise, right? And they're in a place where they're supposed to be happy. But I think that's the cool thing the episode did, was just like, you can't truly be in paradise until you deal with your demons and you wrestle with the conflict that you have within.
Yeah.
So kind of from being to this idyllic paradise that you can't. It's very biblical, right? Like Moses can't go into the promised land type of thing. It's just like they can't be in Pabu because they haven't earned the right to, you know, to retire, you know, for lack of a better word. So they have to go to this inhospitable place to literally wrestle their demons, and their demons is the ice worm. And I thought that cathartic moment was so clever with how Crosshair kind of had his redemption or his moment of healing, and it's literally having Hunter in the hole, in the ground. Mm-hmm. He's in the depths of his soul in the darkness, and he has to pull him out to the light. So it's a healing moment, you know, coming into the light and like finally being with his brother that he's buried deep in his soul. I thought was such a great, you know, good job. And it goes to what you were saying, Sean, at the beginning, that Star Wars really shines in animation, because I feel there's a fearlessness that the writers and animators have with animation. And it's probably because, you know, Bob Iger and the suits at Disney don't mess with it, because they're like, animation, no one watches this, so they can just do whatever the hell they want. And with live action, they're just like, no, we gotta protect that baby, we gotta protect Grogu, and we gotta make sure that he's marketable, we can't get too weird. And animation is just like, just do whatever the hell you want. And there's and you can sense that freedom in a way that doesn't shine as bright in live action. I mean, there's moments, there's flickers of hope, like in Andor and some parts of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and definitely what the hell was I gonna say, and Ahsoka. There we go. I was just like, what the hell is that show? Because we got Purgles, goddammit, and Night Sisters in live action. It's just like, we're getting weird, guys. But I just hope that it pulls the trigger in live action. But yeah, I don't know if we're in responsible speculation territory yet. What do you think, Nanny?
First, I just want to comment that please somebody tell me you got really, really strong Jurassic Park vibes from this episode.
Oh, when they were trying to pump the... Yes.
Yes.
We have to get
the power back.
Pump it. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there's been some really cool references to other movies like throughout. Like we've gotten some Indiana Jones, and we've gotten this... There's been more than this for Jurassic Park. There's been a few things. So I love it also when you add some of those things that make us think about some of our favorite other media as well, and without making it like too in your face. I remember watching it. I was like, oh my God, this is so... We have to get the fence back on.
Yeah. Well, and to add on to that, Nani, like I've seen a bunch of people talking about this online, but the comparisons of Crosshair to Zuko from Avatar the Last Airbender. And like that series, the animated series, is very near and dear to my heart. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but
I love it. And I was not sold on the live
so I haven't watched live action. That can be a separate conversation.
Judge for yourself. But the animated one is, Husband and I love Avatar the Last Airbender. We rewatch it every so often, and I love Zuko. Zuko is for life.
He's
Zuko.
An incredible example of redemption done in the
right
way.
Is that the one with the bird mark on the eye?
It's not a birthmark. His dad burned his face.
Okay, nerd. I haven't seen it. I don't know.
But I guess the comparisons between him and Crosshair are striking to me in a number of ways. But one of the big ways that I was thinking of is that, so when Zuko turns to the light, mild spoiler, he struggles to firebend. He like loses a core ability that makes him who he is. And he has to eventually relearn how to do that in a new way and find a way to harness. Mm-hmm. He used to harness his firepower through hate and anger, and he has to learn it, how to do it through nicer emotions, love, kindness, mm-hmm. all those things. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's a learning process that takes him a while.
And but it does eventually make him stronger than he was when he was using hate.
Way stronger. And I am wondering if they're going to do something similar. This is another little bit of
like why his shaky hand responsible is happening
about his hand, because he's a sniper who can't shoot anymore. And honestly, mm-hmm. moving forward, he shouldn't need that skill necessarily. So how is his skills going to be put to good use? Is his hand going to get better and he's going to find something else to do it with it? Like, is he going to become a carpenter or like, who the hell knows? How is that going to manifest, and what is the final end product of Crosshair going to look like that is going to have him, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, living on Pabu or wherever the hell,
mm-hmm.
contributing to his society and his community in a better way. And from a, not a place of grumpy hate. I'm sure he'll always be grumpy in some way. He'll always be.
Aren't we all
in the corner? Sure. We all get that way. And he's entitled to that. But I think, and I hope that he's on a similar trajectory. But I was thinking of Zuko the whole time, because I think that there's some good groundwork there. And even the individual, like, I need to repair my relationships. And, you know, Wrecker is basically a puppy dog. And that was sort of referenced in this episode where Thatcher gets all excited about digging and then Wrecker also has to dig. And so like, he's like, not to dumb down Wrecker, he's layered, but he's quick to forgive.
Yeah.
Echo is sort of a little bit emotionally detached. He has his own damage and trauma, but
but he also kind of has some empathy for it, because Echo does know what it is like to be imprisoned. So I think there's definitely a level of empathy there, even though he's not as communicative. And also, I think he doesn't want to intrude as much because he wasn't a part of the Bad Batch for as long as the original members were. But your use of that comparison, Zuko, I hadn't thought about it, but now it blew my mind, and I love that. That is so good.
It's responsible speculation, so who knows how that's going to play out.
How they're going to go
off in the next episode, I have no idea. So
yeah,
but it
would be really interesting to see how his identity, because I mean, it's even in his name, Crosshair. Like, his entire identity is based on the fact that he's a sniper. That's it. So if he isn't able to fix his hand or whatever, like, what would he pivot into? And he was the one most like focused on, I have to be a good soldier. So it's going to be a really rough transition for him, and I'm all for it, watching it happen.
You saying that just made me think of the fact that the three remaining original Bad Batch characters that we have, Hunter, Wrecker, and Crosshair, those are all names that actually connotate to fairly aggressive or violent things. And I wonder if they're going to do some sort of renaming, or whether it be an actual literal renaming or more of a spiritual renaming. Like, Wrecker is going to build stuff, or Hunter is going to start farming.
Shepherding.
And Crosshair, who the hell knows what his transition is going to be. But I hadn't thought about that. They're all very war. Centric names that they might not have any use for in the future and might want to be called something else.
A stupid version. This is a smart version. I did a stupid version of it last time. I thought they were gonna like do and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, like in the last episode. Or the title card, when it ends, it changes from Falcon and the Winter Soldier to Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Yeah. Like I was saying on the last episode how they're gonna do from the Bad Batch is just gonna turn into the Good Batch.
The Good Batch. That's hilarious.
But that's a very bad version of your very nuanced take, which I very much prefer to my very lame.
Something attempt. Else to look
if they
for.
Did the Good Batch. I would. Oh god.
That was too literal. The Good Batch is way too literal.
I would die of the cringe for sure.
But that is definitely something to look forward to in responsible speculation. I think that was very responsible speculation.
Who knows?
They should hire you. They should hire you. 100%.
I can only come up with half good ideas after I've seen 90% of what they've done. I am not the person they want in there.
That's good. No, that's good. But it's one of those things, that it's gonna be very interesting how it follows up, because people say that it didn't move the plot along, but completely disagree, because we have with arms wide open, we have a Echo, comes back fulfilling a little bit of the tech role, if we're gonna be honest here. Which, by the way, Emery, she could become the tech.
She could.
On the squad. She wears the goggles. She's a nerd, so.
Yeah.
We can just speculate about that too. But one of the things that the episode did to push the story forward into the end game, so to speak, of the season is, we hack access the iPad so that we can figure out a lot of information about Tantus. So that means that since Echo's back, it means that we're gonna meet with Rex at some point, sooner rather than later. Which I would imagine that the information on the iPad that they need to locate Tantus. Asajj Ventress probably has some of the information that they need to be able to locate it. So obviously this is the responsible speculation part of it. So how do you see now, Sean, I'll start with you, the direction of the season going now that we've had like these first five episodes? Yes, five episodes. How do you see this going based on the information that we just had with the return?
Yeah, so I guess I was, if I have one small complaint about this episode, it's that I did feel like I wanted a little bit more maybe to be revealed about what was on that iPad. Like, I think that the key piece of information, they didn't get a location. Echo has a line about, there's actually way more clones in captivity there than we thought. So that kind of teases at the scale of whatever is this culminating thing. So that's kind of exciting. But now that, Crosshair is more or less welcomed back, I'm sure there's still going to be tension. The next week, we're getting two episodes. And I'm pretty sure the titles are like Infiltration and Extraction or something like that. It's like,
you're right. Infiltration and Extraction. Yeah.
So
Infiltration and Extraction. Oof.
So that's. Like, that's clearly a 1-2 punch. They're clearly infiltrating something and extracting someone. I don't think that's about Tantus.
No, it's too early for Tantus.
Too early. Too early, and they just said that they don't know where that is.
Exactly.
I don't think they're going to resolve that off screen. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if, who knows, maybe they do find that, Rex says, I think I know who might know. Where the next piece of this puzzle is, but they're kind of locked up somewhere, or maybe they're like on a mission somewhere, or they're bounty hunting somewhere, maybe. I still don't know the big question mark about how they're going to bring our Queen Asajj back into the fray.
Right.
I'm very interested as a fan of the Dark Disciple. Our friend Scotty Holiday, very near and dear to my heart. They convinced me to read that book recently. Loved it. But it does raise some questions about how this all moves forward. So I'm eager to find those out. But I think that they might be infiltrating wherever Asajj is and then extracting her from whatever location that is. And then we're off to the races with whatever piece of information she reveals at the end of that episode.
That's extremely responsible, I will say. You're not getting cray cray here.
It would sound crazy if we didn't know that Asajj was going to be.
It's coming back.
It's like a crazy thing to hear.
Contextually,
like it makes a little sense. But if you had told that to me before we got the final trailer,
You'd be like, what?
Shut the fuck up. No. What are you talking about?
It's not just dead. Like, she is what dead. Are you talking about?
Yeah. Canonically. We saw her corpse. Actually, canonically. Yeah. Red,
exactly. I would go, actually on him. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, who knows? It's probably going to change a million ways. We'll probably, I don't know, maybe we'll take a week off of a big creature story. But we already know we're getting a few more creatures involved. Mm-hmm. There's one in a swamp that they haven't done yet. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever it is, I'm along for the ride. I trust Brad Rau. I trust Jennifer Corbett. I trust that whole team at this point to provide an awesome story. I was admittedly not the biggest fan of this show in general at the start of it, but
same.
After spending more time with it,
I think a lot of people felt that way about season one. I think a lot of people felt that way.
But I think that's the trap of Star Wars animation as a whole. Like, the first season's always weak sauce, and then the second season comes back to be like, oh, we got you. This is the good stuff.
But then even when you get that good stuff, so I did a full rewatch recently of the show leading up to this third season, and that first season is, like, not bad at all.
It's solid.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more episodic than what we're getting now.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty freaking cool, and there's a lot more to love there than I remember. So I think the more time I spend with any Star Wars product, really, any story, the more I can pull out of it. And it, I think, might not be my favorite, but there's more to love every time upon revisit. I think that's one of the things that makes Star Wars great, to be honest.
Manny, your turn. What do you think? What are you speculating? What's that noggin of yours cooking up?
Well, I agree that we're definitely getting a retrieval, an extraction of somebody. I don't know if it's already going to be Asajj, because by the looks of how we saw her in the trailer, she had her lightsabers, you know, so I don't think if she was incarcerated somewhere, she had access to her lightsaber. So I don't know if this is the episode for that. Again, I don't know. But we know that we're getting Fennec Shand this season. I'm still hoping that we're going to get Boba. So
we're also getting Cad.
My boy Cad.
Always Cad Bane. So any of these bounty hunters that somehow got themselves into trouble and need an extraction, I think are good candidates to be the one that joins the episodes.
Maybe
wild card.
Maybe it's Quinlan.
Maybe it's Quinlan. We've talked about that too.
Could be. Well, and Nala Se has worked with Fennec before. So, you know, we have that connection. Maybe she can trace it back and figure out where Nala Se is now, and maybe she has some sort of connection there. I don't know. The possibilities are really endless, and I actually prefer not knowing a damn thing about where we're going.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I'm being honest.
Yeah. And I don't think it's going to be Quinlan. I think one lightsaber is enough. I feel like the cool thing, just like Andor kind of shines because it's not like some of the rest of the stuff. And I think Bad Batch is shining also because it's, you know, kind of Jedi adjacent. And I think just having Gungi on season two and now Asajj here is just like, you know, little tastes.
We don't need a lot of Force users.
A little taste of Depa Balaba and Kanan in season one.
Exactly. It's just to you know, whet the appetite for that sweet, sweet Jedi action, but enough to let them stand on their own. So I don't think it's going to be Quinlan, even though that would be dope. But maybe the person they're extracting is the person that will lead to Asajj. Yeah. And Asajj is going to be the key to go to Tantus. Hey, I don't know. I'm still holding that. Timeline-wise, I still don't know because I haven't checked because I always forget immediately after recording. I just purge the information from my mind that I'm going to do this. Where we are in the timeline to know where Thrawn is. Because we know that Tantus was a big deal in the original Thrawn trilogy, Heir to the Empire books. So I wonder if they're going to bring in Thrawn somehow to tangentially connect it then to Ahsoka too and be like, hey, look at our synergy. We're Disney. Animation. Animation, could do that. Live action, books. We got everything. So
they could do that.
So I don't know. I don't know where Thrawn is. I don't know if he's still in the jungle after having escaped. Not escaped, after being kicked out of the Shiz Ascendancy and all that shit. We'll Wikipedia it. But right now I kind of like you said, Sean, not knowing what to expect. Yeah. And I kind of don't even want to speculate. I'm just like, no, I just surprise me. Surprise me, bro. So it's I think that's a good place to be too, because it's just like, it means that we're enjoying
the anticipation and the excitement. I think it's been a really good season so far, and it's kept us on our toes. And
yeah,
even though the trailer like revealed tidbits here and there, we don't have any idea when they're coming at us, and we don't know. Point. Yeah, and
if they gave really us a good sash on the trailer, that means that's the least. I'll give you this because you ain't ready for the rest.
I will say that Lucasfilm knows how to cut a trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
They, I have been so pleasantly surprised in the world of trailer culture that we live in now, that every time I think, like, okay, yeah, the Asajj thing is a reveal, no ways about it, but there were other things that you think are reveals in past trailers that when you look back on, you go like, oh, actually, that was like not the reveal we thought it was. It was like something a little different, or it was like to throw us off the trail a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that they, and now there's still things that I'm stoked about seeing in the season, including Asajj, including that armored tank shooting all the rockets on that bridge. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the hell that is about, but I'm stoked for whenever we get it.
Yep.
I want it as a cool shot of the whole trailer.
I'm just getting chills from you saying that. He's like, oh shit, we're in for a ride.
Yeah, we're in for a ride. Yeah.
It's gonna get so good.
We're eating well.
Yeah. We are eating very well. I wanted to touch on one other thing that I didn't mention before about this episode in particular, which has to do with our dearly beloved and, you know, gone from this reality, Mayday. Our favorite clone. Ugh. Not our favorite clone, but one of my favorite clones.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Like, such an important moment and character for Crosshair and his journey. And I think that the return aspect of, you know, Crosshair revisiting the outpost and, you know, seeing Mayday and his, you know, clone underlings, and like seeing their helmets on the ground and then organizing them, you know, like I have here behind me, like just doing it with a little bit of respect. And for Hunter to see that and be like, oh, this guy, something happened here that's maybe a little deeper than what I understand. Yeah. And he's clearly changed. Something is up with him. He's doing these things that are very on Crosshair. They're not like what he would do. And I think it even comes to play when they're dealing with this worm where Crosshair is like, I lost someone I care about on this planet, you know, as a result of, you know, I spent time with Mayday in a cave, and we had to not blow ourselves up on a landmine, and we had to endure the crazy weather. And even though we overcame all these things, I still lost him to the Empire, which is the thing that made me snap. I am not losing my actual brother on this fucking planet. Like, I'm not doing that. And so that whole through line, like, Mayday is not in this episode, but his presence is very well felt there in Crosshair's actions and his treatment of Hunter, which, you know, I felt very strongly about and is very powerful, even though there's, you know, anyway.
That was beautiful.
I just wanted to note that.
I think that's a good way to kind of like just kind of wrap things up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as I say, with every episode, there's so much, like we say in Spanish, tanta tela para cortar, there's so much fabric that we could be cutting that we don't have enough time to do it. So, you know, I think we hit like a lot of the really cool stuff. Once again, thank you, Sean, for joining us. But, you know, you said you had your podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast, what you got going on, if you want to, like, you know, drop in some of the, you know, projects that you're doing so that all the lovely people that are listening can engage with you.
Yeah, for sure. So on any normal day, you can catch me on Twitter at RoomSean, which is my name. I do sometimes have a podcast going called Boga's Cantina. It's a ripoff of or a play on Oga's Cantina. that's been on hiatus for a while. Life has been crazy, but I am currently unemployed. Your boy is currently jobless, but you know, the job search is ongoing. It's going great. We'll figure out a way to move forward on that, but might have a little bit more time here to do some podcasting. So we'll see about that. And then the other thing that I, actually, you know what? I don't know if I can talk about that just yet. I've got something else in the works. It's nothing major, but it is cool and relevant to Star Wars. And I'm excited for it. But
now I must know.
I can tell you in a minute. It's really not that crazy. I just don't have. I don't know if I have permission.
Just not here. Just
yet.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm online. Tweet me. Talk to me about Star Wars or Manchester United or Formula One or, you know,
Love is Blind.
Love is Blind. Exactly. I'm there.
Perfect. And we will leave links down in the description below so everyone go follow Sean. Great guy. And apostate no more, but still the apostate. But with that, I think we're good to go. Yeah. Now it's a positive. But I think we're good with that. I think, Nani, sign us off.
We are Triad of the Force. Thank you so much for joining us, Sean. That was a great conversation. We are very much enjoying the Bad Batch. We're only 5 episodes in. We are still in for a ride, so strap on. Mm-hmm. Let us know in the comments if you've been enjoying the Bad Batch so far. If you haven't, like, subscribe, let us know what you think, please. And until next time, may the Force be with you.